Hi, this is Ned Siegfried from Siegfried & Jensen. As proud sponsors of BeliefCast, we hope you are inspired by Todd's weekly podcasts, which contain so many courageous stories of recovery and personal growth. Remember, it's not what happened in the past that matters, it's what happens in the future. We invite you all to work hard and be optimistic about your future. Enjoy today's podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Todd Sylvester with the Todd Inspires BeliefCast. Thank you once again for tuning in. So grateful for your support. I can't thank you guys enough. I need to give a shout out to our sponsors, Siegfried & Jensen, Wasatch Recovery, Mori Nutrition, and Thread Wallets. You guys are fantastic. Thank you for supporting me. Also, the music you heard at the beginning and at the end of this podcast is by my good friend Paul Cardall. He's an award-winning pianist, and his music is timeless, man. It's amazing what he does with the piano. So thank you, Paul, for believing in me as well. And so today we are going to be blessed with an amazing podcast today because these ones really hit home because, as most people know, I work with people who struggle with, you know, addictions, you know, with drugs or alcohol, mental health issues, that kind of thing. And people who would, society might look at and go, their chances of change are slim to none. And I don't believe in those statistics at all. And today is living proof. We have Derek Lamoureux on our podcast today. Derek, thank you for being here.
Of course, it's an honor.
Yeah.
How you doing, Todd?
So good. We are co-workers. We are colleagues, right? We work together here at Wasatch Recovery. But Derek has an amazing story where he actually used to be a client here at Wasatch Recovery. And to see him now where he's at a year later-ish?
Over a year? 16 months.
16 months?
Yep.
And that you're actually working here. If you would have saw this dude a year and a half ago, you would have been like, this guy's going to prison the rest of his life or he's going to be dead. I mean, in rough, rough shape. And boy, what the transformation. One of my favorite sayings is, the greater the darkness, the greater the light. And you are in the depths of the darkness, right? I mean, on a level. And then the light we see in you and the light you get to experience in your life because of the changes you decided to make. And that's what's made this happen today. You've pushed me to be on here, which I love. You're just a go-getter. But before we start into your story, Derek, who are we honoring today?
So a big part of my recovery is my older brother, Kyle. He was a scout sniper in the Marines and a black belt Taekwondo martial artist. Those were the two things that he was most passionate about.
Yeah.
And the two things that changed him kind of from like where I was at, rebel, bad kid, to a man and probably my idol that I look up to the most. I have no idea where I'd be right now without my older brother, Kyle. And 4.5 years ago, he committed suicide. He took his own life about 4 miles up the street, up Little Cottonwood Canyon. And today would be his 35th birthday. So
okay, well, shout out to Kyle. He would be very proud of you today, dude, knowing what you've been through and got to where you're at. And what a great birthday present for him today, don't you think?
100%.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you already got me tearing up here, Derek, and we just barely started. So why don't we do this, Derek? Let's start with your childhood. Just talk about, you know, a little bit about your family and what your childhood looked like.
Okay. I was the middle child of 5 kids and grew up in Orem, Utah. And my dad coached me in basketball, baseball, and football. So okay. I was the coach's son.
Okay. So really involved in sports, huh?
Yeah. Really involved in sports.
Was he harder on you because he was your son?
Yeah.
You were his son? Yeah.
And because there's a lot of stigma that goes with being the coach's son.
Yeah.
And what I remember, one of the things I remember about it is like being at baseball practice, and there's 12 kids, and he's hucking to one of them, and kind of got to sit around and bullshit with the other 11 and make sure they're happy and they're, you know, engaged in practice. And I think that's, I started to develop pretty good social skills at a young age, because when you're the coach's son, you got to go hang out with the rest of the team. It doesn't matter if you like them, you don't like them. Yeah. They're your teammates.
Yeah.
And so you have to, especially being the coach's son, you got to be nice to them and look out for them.
Right on. So really involved in sports. And then what were you like as a kid?
Yeah. I was out there for sure. So I lived in Springville from 3 to 8 years old.
Okay.
And one of my neighbors, she had this gorgeous garden, right? All these flowers and stuff. And me and my cousin Jackson, we were over there, and we were like, let's tear these flowers up. So we stomp out her whole garden, right? this old poor neighbor is she's crying and like trying to, you know, but like to this day, like when we see each other, she's like laughing and thanking me for it, because we were just kids, you know. We didn't know any better. Yeah. But I definitely had like a really good upbringing in childhood.
Yeah, you got a very supportive family, it feels like. Is that correct?
Yeah, most definitely.
You know, your sister was a big part of your support, I know, while you were here at Wasatch going through as a client.
Yeah.
She was very supportive. I remember that.
Madison, my little sister Madison, she is, she's definitely an angel. That's one of my best friends. That's even in my addiction, she treated me the same way. She didn't look at me and be like, "Man, Derek, you know, what are you doing? You're on meth. It's 2 a.m. Why do you keep bugging me and my boyfriend?"
Yeah.
She never said anything like that.
Wow. That's amazing. So you're really into sports, this and that. When did things start to kind of get tough for you as a kid? You know, because I know you started pretty young with drugs and alcohol and things and partying and that kind of thing. What was kind of the transition to that?
So honestly, once I hit junior high, seventh grade, the kids in my ward stopped hanging out with me. It was kind of like, "You've graduated. We're not going to hang out with you anymore."
Was it because you were doing things they didn't want to do, or is it just more you were just getting older, or what
more,
was it?
I think it was more of a my sporadic energy level was kind of different than the kids in my ward, where they're a little more passive and conservative.
Were you considered like hyper?
Oh yeah, hyperactive for sure.
So they're like, "Man, this guy's a lot right now."
Right.
Yeah, just high energy. Just
like, man. They loved me and they always treated me super nice, but I guess the writing was kind of on the wall.
Okay.
Almost
like this feeling, this guy is going to be doing some crazy things.
Yeah, right. No, most definitely. So once that happened, I kind of responded by hanging out with whoever. And and I was a really good kid. I would hang out with those kids that were smoking weed and popping pills, but there was no judgment. I was kind of like their safe place, where if they weren't doing all right or needed water or like the basics, they could come to me and I would kind of take them away from the worst situations. That's where some of my best friends came from. And then over time, you know, it's like you hang out at the barbershop long enough, you can get your hair cut.
Yeah.
So it went from that to now my friends are, you know, doing home invasions and robbing people. Then I had a lot of older friends that went to Pleasant Grove. I ended up going to Timpanogos, so I had all the protection in the world from a lot of bigger people. So I was basically untouchable, and I would kind of help with my homies. I'd help coordinate sales of stolen items. Weed started with the weed. So I guess the the next turning point in my life was we lost a play-in game to go to the playoffs my senior year of high school. So we beat Provo in the first half. We had to beat Orem in the second half. And the game goes to double or triple overtime. Our kicker misses like three or four field goals, and we lose the game. The next night, one of my buddies stole $2,000 from a car that was at a church, and he called me. I picked him up. We had a Sadie's that weekend, so we started getting all the drugs, the weed, the Adderall, and we get pulled over, and it was my car, but I was in the passenger, and I end up throwing some Adderall out the window, and the cop sees that, grabs me, throws me in the back of the cop car. One of the other kids goes to DT. The other three of my homies, we were rolling pretty deep. We were five deep. Other three homies, they get a walk, and the day after my senior football season ended, I'm at Slate Canyon Detention Center. End up doing 17 days, and I think growing up in the with the sports and everything, I thought, you know, senior years can get over. I'm going to have a full ride. We'll be playing at the U or somewhere. And, yeah, once that whole thing happened, that was out the window.
Yeah, that had to have been tough to realize that, right? A realization that this isn't going to move on for you sports-wise.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so let's go back a little bit, Derek. You know, as you're going through this, you know, you're partying more and you're doing these more high-risk things and stuff. You know, talking about your brother Kyle, did he know that you were going through this? Did he know you were struggling? Did he see any of this?
So he got some of the bad attention, I would say, from my parents. Because he wasn't pursuing sports like I was.
Yeah.
And I have an older sister that was a super, super good sister, ended up serving an LDS mission. So he was kind of the black sheep early. So that took a lot of the attention off of me. So everything I was doing, I was getting away with it.
Yeah, so the folk, okay, gotcha.
I was off the radar.
That happens a lot sometimes when another kid might be struggling. The other kid who's struggling as well doesn't maybe get it as much.
Right, and so one of the funny things about me and Kyle is growing up from 8 to 12 years old, just like any brothers did, we threw down. Like, we would have family parties on, like, Sundays and Saturdays, and the main event was me and Kyle. What time are they going off? You know, place your bets now.
Really?
And
yeah.
And you know, you could just feel the tension in the air with the family. And, you know, I got my cousin going, yeah, Derek, you know, you're going to get him tonight. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was going to happen whether we liked it or not, just because of, you know, the situation. And we both loved it, you know. I was always sitting there pushing the button. And it was just, you know, he's going
to
snap.
To get the reaction.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the last time me and Kyle fought, I started going and grabbing the kitchen knife, right? I'd get my ass kicked, run upstairs, grab a kitchen knife, feel a little bit more threatening, you know? And so I run upstairs, I grab two kitchen knives, and it was a three-story. So I run down one story, and Kyle's sitting there with a samurai sword. So I got my two kitchen knives. He's got a samurai sword. And my mom walks in the front door, starts screaming, runs upstairs to her room. And that was the last time that we ever fought.
Well, you know, it's funny, not funny, but I think people listening to this right now going, man, you know, that's what you did in your family. You guys fought that bad, you know, and again, it's zero judgment on my part. And anyone listening to this is, you know, we all get raised different ways. We go through different trials. And sometimes it's kind of like all you knew. This is how we do things, right?
Yeah.
Because some people listen to this and be like, man, that's intense, right?
Right.
So at that point, you guys decided, hey, we got to stop doing this.
Yeah. So we stopped doing that. And then it was about 4 years later, my parents, super active, were running marathons twice a month. So long story short, some of my friends got together, some of his friends got together. They got the alcohol. I wasn't drinking. I think I had been drinking, but I didn't want to give that to my brother and be like, hey, bro, right, I'm drinking. So my friends got drunk, his friends got drunk, and we had like a house party at my parents' house. Mm. So, yeah.
Okay. So at this point, though, now things are going really, I'm assuming the drug use is getting more frequent, more intense.
So honestly, what happened with me is I had a lot of players, you could say, in the game, and it was like, Derek, you're off the radar with your parents. Let's have you hold the weed at your house. Whenever a homie needs a sack, you'll run it out to him.
Okay.
So I start selling weed out of my parents' house. And for a 17-year-old kid that doesn't have a D1 scholarship, when you're making $100, $200 a week and I wouldn't even look at it as I was selling weed. I was just helping my friends get weed from a safe place.
Yeah.
Where they're not going to get ratted on.
But basically, though, selling weed.
Yeah. No, 100% selling weed.
You probably didn't calculate, hey, I'm a drug dealer.
No, not at all.
Like back then, you're just like, no, I'm just helping people out. But really, you're dealing drugs.
100%.
Wow. Yeah. So you did this for how long?
So probably about 3 or 4 years. Like, it got to the point where I was in an apartment on UVU campus. I'm picking up quarter pounds of weed. I got a good connect, and everyone knows my name. People I don't even know are texting me, hey, D-Lam, I need a sack. And I would kind of look at that and be like, I don't know you. You know what I'm saying? You're hitting me up for weed. I've never met you. You're coming through this third party guy that got a sack from one of my buddies. And they're
acting like they're your best buddy.
And then it's like, I can rip them off as hard as I want. You know, when you got people texting you, not a quantity amount, they're saying, I need $80 worth. Well, what's $80 worth of weed?
You get to decide. I guess.
Let me eyeball this, put a couple leaves, break them up a little bit, and I'll sell that to you for 80. If you come back, great. If you don't, fuck you.
We'll edit that out.
My bad.
It's okay. So you're doing this for a while. Does your family know at all that you're doing this?
I don't think so. Obviously, the stint with DT, you know, they knew something was going on.
They knew you were struggling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this is the time after I went to DT, I started getting in the rooms with the people that were doing hardcore drugs and hardcore crime activity. And I was still a good person where it wasn't appealing enough for me to jump the gun and jump into that lifestyle. But I watched those people in that environment for 4 to 5 years before I ever touched it, which is interesting to me. But you hang around long enough, you're getting a haircut.
Yeah, right. So, you know, we don't have to go into all the details, but when I met you, when you came here to Wasatch, when you first got here, again, rough shape. really rough shape. And what I mean by that is, for our listeners, is, I mean, here's this guy doing meth and not sleeping. And I mean, you name it, everything else under the sun. But I mean, meth was the one that was just causing all kinds of havoc in your life. You and I have a really cool, it's hard to portray but some of the amazing sessions we've had in here, you and I, like these aha moments. Remember those where we just like, dude, right? Did you feel that? Right? We had such an amazing thing. And then connecting the dots about what happened to you, because you had an opportunity to speak at a junior high. But I want you to share that story, because again, you're in a paranoid, schizophrenic state of mind, if you will, high on meth, haven't slept. So start from there. You're running down by Thanksgiving Point, and just take it from there, Derek, and tell us what happened there, but then how it comes full circle speaking at the junior high.
Okay. So I'm driving from Sandy, because I'm working up here, to Orem, and I got 3 or 4 grams of meth on me, and the car behind me gets pulled over. Okay, so I see these cop lights come on. They're not pulling me over, but pretty damn close. It's the car behind me.
Right.
So
now you're thinking.
So naturally, I grab the baggie, throw it in my mouth, and I eat it, and start driving over the point of the mountain, and it's kicking, right? Like, I'm starting to feel unsafe. I'm starting to see all the colors out there. And basically, I'm like, I got to get out of this car before I kill someone, get pulled over, or kill myself.
Yeah.
So I get off the Lehigh exit, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go to the Front Runner, you know, leave the car there, have someone pick me up in Orem. So paranoid, I couldn't even go to the Front Runner. I was like, no, I'm not going over there. And so I go to the Holiday over there in Lehigh. I park the car, I leave my phone in there, and I got my brother's military backpack. I got all his obituary, a bunch of pictures that we have from our childhood in the backpack, because that was my ammo. That's how I was getting through these days.
Okay.
So I get out of the car and I start doing my football, my defensive back drills, right? So I'm backpedaling, transition to sprint, backpedaling, and past the skate park. And it's a beautiful day, and everyone's just having like the best time. So my vibe was just like, let's not ruin anyone else's day. Yeah, your day's ruined. You just ate 4 grams of meth. Let's not ruin anyone else's.
Okay.
So that was my vibe. And
yeah,
the splash pad's right next to the skate park. So just seeing beautiful things, right? Kids enjoying skating, kids and their families playing at a splash pad. And it was beautiful. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to disturb or ruin that.
Right.
And at this point, I'm still running from the cops that pulled the car over behind me.
Yeah. And they're not even coming after you, but you think they are.
I think
that's part of the psychosis that you go through. Right.
And so I think I'm smooth by doing my little defensive. I'm just a runner. I'm an athlete out here training. What cop's going to pull over an athlete that's training? So I get down a little further. There's the overpass. I go onto like the overpass, and there's the trail to the Jordan River. Okay, and I'm feeling great, you know. Besides the paranoia and everything like that, I'm feeling pretty damn good. And so I'm going on the Jordan River Trail, and there's 6 tubes and 5 people in the tubes. And in my reality, they threw out the invite. Hey, we got an extra tube. Come jump in, you know? And I'm a pretty cool person, you know? Like, who wouldn't offer Derek to come jump in the tube?
Right.
So so I'm thinking, this is perfect, right? Shed a layer. I'm going to jump in the tube. When the cops pull up, I've been tubing all day with these guys. What do you mean?
Yeah, what are you talking about? Yeah.
Right.
It's your alibi.
It's my alibi. So I run into this Jordan River, right? Next thing I know, I'm hitting the bottom of the river. A current picked me up, and it had me just choo-choo. So I'm hitting the bottom of the river, and I guess I'm coming up every couple of seconds, right? And I just hear one of the girls in the tube say, Andrew, go save him. So about 10 seconds later, this kid pulls me up out of the river, And I'm still feeling pretty good. Like the whole, like I'm about to die and drown thing. Like that's not reality for me.
Yeah,
I'm feeling
too
good.
'Cause you're high.
Yeah. And, so he pulls me up from the water and I'm like, I still got to shed the layer. So I go back down, I shed a layer, and then I'm doggy paddling over to the tube. And, I get to the tube and they're like, ah, like what's going on? And I was like, what I said to them was, police are trying to kill me. So they're like, yeah, we're gonna take you back to the shore, you know? And I was mm-hmm. like, and my vibe is still what it is. I'm not trying to ruin anyone's day.
Sure, yeah.
So they're taking me over to the bank, and I keep telling them, don't let the police beat me up when I get over there. I know the police are in the bushes right when I get over there. They're gonna swarm me. And this is like, this was right after the George Floyd thing had happened.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, that blew up.
So again, adds to the paranoia.
Adds to the paranoia.
Yep.
So I get to the bank, I come up, and this is where I think I was definitely in psychosis. So I come up from the bank and I see two cops biking off, like right when I came up, they're just biking off. And I'm like, this is great. This is second chance at freedom. You know, like
yeah,
they can't catch me, right?
Yeah.
So I cross the bridge and I'm running up this hill where there's undeveloped houses. The backyards aren't like finished, but the houses are up. So no, I lost my backpack, lost my shirt, right? So it's just Derek, he's got shoes, sweats on, soaking wet. I pop out of this backyard and the homeowner and the next door neighbor are on the front lawn. So they see me and I'm sporadic. I'm twitching and they're like, are you good? And I was like, yeah, no. And one of them's being super like, bro, you're not okay. Like, how can I help you?
Yeah.
I'm like, don't worry, they're already on their way. No need to call. They're already coming. So one of them steps in, inside to call the police, obviously, because they're worried about me. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I'm erratic. I just popped out of the backyard. I'm soaking wet. So I'm like being kind of cool to the one guy that's still hanging with me, but I'm like, your homie's inside narking on me. I think I'm a jet. And he's like, okay. Like, so I kind of just snapped on him. I go two blocks. I hop a fence. I'm on the Thanksgiving golf course. So now I'm like, yeah, when are the Lehigh police really going to be here? And it's kind of out of ways. So 15, you know, it takes them 10, 15 minutes. And, I can't blame anyone for wanting to watch someone get swarmed by the police and get tackled and get locked up for acting the way that I was acting. So the neighbors, they kind of start lining up. Like, I would say I had an audience of 25 to 30 people just kind of waiting.
Yeah.
And, So this is where it gets real. So this is about the year mark of my brother passing away. So with my brother, there was a lot of PTSD, right?
Yeah.
He served in three wars. He was a scout sniper. I can't imagine what he has seen and what he has done.
Right.
So there was a confrontation the last day that my brother was alive. The police told him that he couldn't live with his family anymore, and that's what I feel like kind of sparked him to go and commit suicide.
Yeah.
So that was That's I wanted to say something to the police. So we got an audience now.
Yeah.
The police are coming. I'm on a golf course. This is perfect. I'm gonna tell these police exactly how I feel and place the blame of my brother not being here on them.
Mm.
So one other thing with me, I have a lot of Polynesian friends. And so first cop that shows up, Polynesian. So I'm thinking, I'm skating. I'm getting away.
This guy's gonna let me go.
This guy's gonna let me go. And he comes up and first thing he says, he's like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm still twitching, right?" And I was like, "Chilling." So I'm telling him I'm chilling, but obviously I'm not.
With no shirt on and sweat. Soaking wet.
Soaking wet.
From and, the river.
And he goes, "Who you running from?" And I said, "You guys." And he said, "We weren't chasing you." And I was like, "Well, if that's that, then what hardcore evidence do you guys have against me at this point, right?"
Yeah.
And so we start bro-ing down. And he's like, "What happened?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I just, you know, ate a little bit." And he's like, "Ate a little bit of," and I'm not saying much, but enough, right, you know. Then we start talking about football, and we had some common people that we knew through football, and so the banter's kind of started about that. And then I told him exactly how I felt about my brother not being here, the pain that I'm going through, that our family's going through. And I told them that it was the cops' fault and that it wasn't fair that my brother wasn't here anymore. And as I'm telling this, and there's 30 people, you know, out there listening, another cop shows up and he's like, "If we find anything in your backpack, or if there's anything in the river that is sharp that hits a kid in the foot, we're charging you." And just out of line bullshit. So he goes down to the river to grab my stuff. And another white cop shows up and he's like, "I have a Kai dog tatted on my chest." And he comes up and he's like, "Who's Kai dog? Like, nice tattoo, bro." Like, kind of trolling me. And these 30 people just listen to me pour my heart out about how much pain I'm in and how much I love my brother.
Yeah, right.
And then they see two cops in a row come up, absolutely disrespect me and my brother, and walk off. So the Polynesian cop is like, "Hey, you know, do you want to go to the hospital or do you want to go home? Like, you can walk or you can go to the hospital." And my body's acting erratic. I don't feel safe.
Yeah.
So I'm like, "I need to go to the hospital." So he takes me to the hospital. Scary moment in the hospital because I just ate 4 grams of meth. They're trying to shoot me up with all this stuff to bring me down.
Right.
And I'm going in and out on the in the hospital. So I rip the IVs out because I'm not liking the response, you know what I'm saying? So I ripped the IVs out, kind of going crazy in there up against the glass, thinking they're trying to kill me. And my dad shows up. My poor dad, he shows up 5 hours later to pick me up. And he has no idea
what you had just been through.
Right. He has no idea. All he knows is that I'm not acting normal. And so then it was like, I was just like, "Yeah, I'll be out of the house by Friday." And it was like a Tuesday. So like, that was pretty, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and that's my parents have always been there for me and almost to a fault with the enabling.
Sure.
So he was kind of like, "Yeah, if you'll be out by Friday, like, I'm okay with that," kind of thing. And so that Friday, and like, so all that happened, right? I went to work the next day and I'm sitting at a call center. And I'm twitching, making these calls. Everyone in the row is just having a great time because it is pretty hilarious from their standpoint.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the whole Lehi experience.
Yeah. Well, and thanks for sharing that. That's really descriptive, and I think it's good for our listeners because I want to. So, you know, you eventually check yourself into Wasatch Recovery, right? And one of the things we do at Wasatch is from, you know, like every 3 months or so, depending on the time of year, we will pick, you know, a handful of our clients to go speak to the junior high kids in the health classes about, you know, staying away from drugs and alcohol and what addiction's done to our lives, this and that. And so you just so happened to be in treatment at the time where we had one of those opportunities come up. And it was actually, you got asked to go speak at a junior high. And what was the name of the junior high again?
Willow Creek.
Willow Creek Junior High. And anyway, after you had spoken, and it was a great experience, you can share your thoughts. You come back, we're sitting in our session here, right here at Wasatch Recovery. And one of the things I love sharing with my clients is that life happens for us. And it's tough when you tell someone that and they've had just nothing but hell happen to them. Because they look at me like, really, dude? And I still believe it. As hard as it is when we go through something really difficult, I just see it over and over again. It's like, man, see how this happened for you. And we started connecting the dots about the yards that you found yourself in, that owner and the homeowner and the neighbor, you know, when you're pulling yourself out of the Jordan River into this neighborhood, you know, around Thanksgiving Point area, is the exact same neighborhood that their kids would go to Willow Creek Junior High. And I thought, dude, how crazy is that? Where just a short time ago, you were, you know, freaking out, paranoid, psychosis, thinking someone's going to kill you, all this stuff. I mean, you look, I can only imagine what you look like to them, you know, just, they're probably like, this guy's crazy, right?
Yeah.
And then here we are, go full circle, where you come in here, you start putting in a lot of work, you worked your butt off, and then you go to this junior high and you just share your heart with these kids. And what we connected, correct me if I'm wrong, this is where my head goes. You tell me your side of it, but where your very words could have changed this the kid's life to never touching drugs because of what you said in the very neighborhood that they called the cops on you to eventually get you into treatment.
Yeah. No, that's right? 100% correct.
Yeah. And I remember connecting those dots in here, and we were both just blown away, dude. I think we even hugged after, like, dude, how crazy is this? And again, life happens for us. Now, granted, it could have gone all kinds of different ways.
Right.
You could have gone to jail for a long time. You could have died. There's so many things, but yet, thankfully, these neighbors at least thought of you enough to go, we need to get, he's in trouble.
Yeah.
Let's get him help. And if they arrest him, they arrest him. Who cares? Right? Because right. They're like, man, this guy's just not right. But how cool is that? And just how did that feel when we connected those dots?
So I think it's because after that day, I didn't land up in treatment for another 2 years. Okay.
Right.
So think of that paranoia where I was at for that.
Yeah.
That went on for 2 more years.
Yeah. You're just running and gunning.
No charges, and that's what I think that's what the law enforcement and the police officers are for to protect you and make sure you're safe.
Yeah.
Obviously the community. But when you're not getting caught, the damage that you start doing to yourself with the drugs that you're putting into your body, that was the eye opener for me. I could have died out there running and gunning, and it wouldn't have been anyone else's fault but mine.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like a testimony that the police aren't going to go find someone that's hiding under a rock and not hurting anyone else, but that person's going to suffer. And so I can speak from the suffering addict that isn't getting thrown in jail and getting a break, and that really, you know, you saw me when I got here, and you and me both know I was the happiest person to be here. What's better than being away from that 3-year run of being in a safe place, meeting someone named Todd Sylvester, and being able, like I started going to therapy. I was high as a kite, but I was going to therapy, and that shit was even more traumatic because you're processing all these, and all right. that's a heavy dangerous, dangerous place to be.
Yeah,
and it got up to the point where every weekend I was in the hospital. Every week I was calling the cops on myself. My last run, I punched myself 40 times in the face on State Street. So disappointed in myself, so mad that my brother had passed away. I'm over here on meth, acting super immature, and having no control, and the chemical dependency that my body was needed to function. There was no not getting high for a day. I was getting high every day, and that's how my body was was responding to that. And so right when I got here, like, God set me down so gently, but from your eyes, it might be like you showed up here in rough shape.
Yeah.
And
but it could have been way worse.
Could have been so much worse.
Yeah.
And well, and some people never come back from that. That's the scary part is the sobriety that I've got under my belt and the mental health and the physical health, I'll never use again unless I start lying to myself.
Yeah.
Because all of that stuff is going to come flooding back.
What you've learned, man.
It's going to come flooding back. And that's the thing is, like, when you were speaking in here, I was listening. I was engaged. I loved eating up what you were serving.
Dude, I was going to say, I agree. I loved it because you challenged me even. Like, you, right? You remember that? You'd come in and go, okay, dude, give me your best. Like, you really did. And I remember that often and how hard you worked. And you were constantly coming up. What do you got for me? You know, you were just, you were like a sponge. You were soaking it in. And I remember, this is kind of a funny story, but also very cool. The fun run we did. We had our first annual fun run with Wasatch Recovery that Tina puts on, and it was awesome. It was so cool. And here's Derek just freshly into rehab, and we're doing this run, right? It's a 5K, so it's, you know, 3.1 miles or 3.2 miles, whatever that is. And you know, and I've been running, I've been training. I'm thinking, man, I'm gonna smoke this dude, right? Dude, they said go, and I'm telling you what, Derek, we laugh. It was as if you were being chased by the cops. This guy just, pew, he takes off like a, you know, shot out of a cannon. And I'm thinking, I just started laughing. I'm going, he's gonna gas out. I'll just coast right on past him and laugh at him and this and that. But dude, you didn't stop. And you won, and you finished it, and you—it was crazy, and you were foaming at the mouth, and it was like, man, I hope this guy doesn't die on us, and I'll never forget what you said. It was—I don't even know if it was that day, but it was a little bit after. You had a purpose in that run, and what was the purpose? Your brother Kyle.
Yeah.
And I remember you telling me I had to go do. I was doing some video shoots. And I have to be on in these videos. And I remember you telling me, well, Todd, you know, you'll be fine if you just know what your purpose is. And so it was interesting. The camera guy, when he was interviewing me or getting me ready to record, he goes to me, okay, you got to picture one of your clients when you're doing this because, you know, they got to feel it. And instantly it was Derek. I was like, I'm thinking of Derek, man, because you had just told me that about purpose. And anyway. So I just want you to know, D, I've learned just as much from you. I hope you know that more than you know. Like, truly, like, I just loved how you challenged me on so many levels as of what I do. And I've been doing this forever. But here I got Derek coming in, just hitting me left and right. I was like, dang. But I appreciate it. I hope you know that. Like, I really do. And you did work your butt off here. We do have to give a shout out to Ashley. She was a big help, and I love Ashley. I know you do too. She's fantastic, and she was a big part of your success as well. But yeah, I just wanted to point that out. You helped me more than you know.
Likewise, and Like you'll never know the gratitude and appreciation my family has for you, my brother, myself. Like what you've been able to allow me to tap into is a real clean life where you feel all the emotions and the feelings that us as humans are supposed to feel.
Right.
And I'll be forever grateful for you. And like I said, if I ever pick up again, I'm lying to myself.
Yeah. Well, you learned about it. Man, I'm telling you, you know, if you don't know what he's referring to, we talk a lot about this. I do especially, is if you're honest with yourself, you'll never relapse, because you have to lie to go back to it. You just know too much. Your mind's been stretched. It can never go back to its original dimensions. And so that's such a powerful, simple principle of honesty, just flat out honesty. And it's good to hear you just embrace that, dude.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
No, and I think my other favorite story that you have is, was it Tracy or Stacy that made friends with the spider?
JC, yeah.
That story of her being able to forgive her abusers, and she made friends with a spider.
Right.
If she can do that and get out of that, what is, you know, drug addiction to that? It's nothing.
Yeah, and I love how you simplify things in your mind, because it is. It's simple. We try to overcomplicate it, and who he's referring to is JC Dugard, who was kidnapped and, you know, abused sexually in a shed for 18 years, and yet she doesn't hate the abuser because she realizes that would keep her stuck, and she overcame it, and she's doing great things in this world. And so but I love how you just like going, oh yeah, if she can do that, I can overcome my meth addiction and, you know, my irrational thinking here, you know. So I just loved how you always took things and just simplified them for yourself.
Yeah, and I mean, another one is like the Eastern culture and the Western culture. That was the first lesson. And I know you had something else planned for that day. And I was like, hey, bro, like my brother committed suicide.
Yeah.
You switched the whole lesson. You said, hey, guys, is it okay if we go this route instead today? And everyone was okay with it. And you taught me the lesson of Eastern culture. They celebrate birthdays and anniversaries, and the Western culture has more of like a grieving approach to it.
Yeah, so the Eastern culture celebrates death like we do, like a birthday or an anniversary, where here in the Western culture we grieve. And it's not saying one's better than the other typically. It's just like, but I asked you, what would Kyle want from you, and what did you say?
To be clean and sober.
Yeah, and happy, right?
And happy.
And celebrate his life, celebrate him by being happy. And just that little shift, and it was so interesting. Again, I felt inspired to do that. And what I love about that is you didn't fight it. Like, you just like, I've never thought of it that way. You know, and I saw it in you. It's like this shift. You're just like, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to celebrate Kyle by being happy instead of grieving and having an excuse to go blow up your life. Which, again, who would fault you? I mean, that's tough. You don't want to, when you lose a brother like you did, that's not easy.
And I think what hits with me, what hits home, is my brother served the U.S. Marines for 10 years, okay? Mm-hmm. Three tours. He was a scout sniper. When he passed away, people were flying over from Japan, all across the country. I think I read with you,
yes,
the note that they had left.
That note was amazing.
About him, he was creating training programs for Marines. And so my brother does all of that. He takes his own life. How selfish would I be to live a life of methamphetamine and alcohol? Poor me. He basically, what I'm getting at is he's out there fighting for us to be free. And if I'm over here in an addiction,
yeah,
then I'm not free. Yeah. So that's kind of like where I go, is I want to be free and I want to respect the service that he's done for our country. And if I'm just using drugs and alcohol to kill myself, that's not honoring my brother.
Yeah. Wow. Powerful. Thank you. Dang. Well, Derek, if there's someone listening to your voice right now and they're in a bad place, they're in a dark place, they're struggling, you've already shared some really cool things, but what would you tell that one person right now who's struggling?
I would say ask for help. The help is out there. You just have to start asking. And I think that's one of the hardest things for us to do in 2024 is to ask someone for help.
Yeah.
But that alone saved my life.
Yeah. Simple but powerful. You need help, ask. And anyone listening to this, if you need help, please ask. Ask Derek, ask myself. You know, reach out to Wasatch Recovery. We're here to help you. And so, yeah, very simple but yet powerful words, Derek. I can't thank you enough for taking some time today to be on my podcast. It means the world to me. And again, you made this happen. Dude, you didn't let up.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm going to be on that podcast. And you're like, I'm like, all right, we'll see. And here we are. And I want you to know you made this happen. And we're going to get this out to a lot of people. Thousands and thousands of people are going to hear this story and hear you, Derek. And you're going to inspire them. So my hat's off to you, man. You've done a lot of good work. There's still work ahead, which again, I know you're doing it. You're working. You're a hard worker. You always have been, and you've just shifted that energy in a different direction, which is really cool.
Yeah, no, so. I just want to say thank you, Todd, for letting me have this opportunity to give back and to speak to other people. What you're doing, I crack up because 34 years strong, you know, you had a shotgun in your mouth 34 years ago, and that hits so close to home with me and losing my brother, and the work that you're doing now for the community, for Wasatch, for people is amazing.
Yeah, thank you. You keep making me cry in this episode, dude. Thank you for the kind words. That means a lot. And I say this often. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, and I put you on my shoulders for a minute, but now you're a giant now for other people, right? Honestly. And so if you're out there and you're strung out on drugs or meth or whatever it may be, if you think you can't change, you're lying to yourself. It's that lie that's keeping you stuck. And Derek is living proof of that, and that you can overcome it when you just start telling the truth, you ask for help, and you were just put in the work and you'll get it. So Derek, you're the man. Thanks for being here. Thanks for all you do here at Wasatch. We love you. I love you. And thank you for your time today.
Of course. Thank you, Todd. Love you too, bro.
Thanks, man. Well, there you go, guys. What a beautiful story. Beautiful human being, Derek. Please share this episode with anyone you know that's struggling. It doesn't have to be drugs or alcohol. It could be any struggle whatsoever. They'll get inspired by these words, and it'll allow you to kind of break the ice with someone that you may not know how to talk to him, and let Derek talk to him for you and break the ice for you. So thanks for all your support. Again, thanks to my sponsors. I love you so much. It means the world that you guys would support me. And thanks for tuning in, guys, week after week. Love you. Till next time.